to go?
100% good.
I know we almost couldn't do the podcast because Stu had to use the facilities.
like people do.
You are human, contrary to popular belief.
And Stu held off for a significant portion of this broadcast to make space for everybody else.
But
like the bladder took a back seat.
That's why on Pop Culture Days, you just gotta avoid drinking too much water before the show.
Yeah, the morning is my time to ingest a lot of water though. So I work out in the morning. I'm constantly drinking, you know, so.
Fair enough.
So I'm kind of busy the first half of the day,
the workout
and the six trips to the restroom.
You're always busy. The Grim Reaper in the house for this edition of the Puck Culture Podcast. We've got a jam-packed show. Natalie Spooner of Team Canada fame coming up later
That'll be good.
Also, of course, Team Canada, a huge moment for women's hockey over the weekend in St. Louis with the 3-on-3 competition. We're going to dive into all of that, but I was in St. Louis. You were not, so I'm curious, Stu, your takeaways from All-Star Weekend as a viewer at home.
Yeah, and I enjoy that, too, from time to time, you know, not being at the event, you get to kind of see it through the fans'
it's
eyes.
It's different, right?
It
TV
really
and
is,
in person, totally
because
different.
Because you're really kind of examining it, trying to get a feel for it, the way it comes through your television set, and I thought it was fantastic. And it's amazing to me. It really feels like, you know, each event is unique in its own way, but each event, each year now, we seem to add something new, and each city kind of puts its own spin on it. Thought St. Louis did a fantastic job hosting it, number one, and then, you know, just kind of the spectacle, the competitions on the ice were a lot of fun to watch, like women's 3-on-3. I thought that was fabulous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was the event I was most looking forward to for obvious reasons as
and
a Canadian that grew up.
I always love the individual skill stuff. Like, you know, even after all these years, just seeing the guys shoot and especially skate, that whole, you know, the tension that kind of leads up to the hot lap and who can do the hot lap and break the best time, the best preceding time, those are big moments.
And the idea that everyone on the red carpet was going into the event saying, we're playing for second, like, no way Connor McDavid loses, it's him and everybody else. And then Matt Barzal shows
and Barzal
up and
comes
says,
out of nowhere.
I don't think so, but even Barzal was like, I honestly was kind of playing for second, but I just ended up having a really good lap. But someone brought up the idea of having the fastest skater competition be with the puck. So, like, I'd like to see a fastest skater competition with the puck on your stick.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
What do you think of that as a former player? Harder,
it's
obviously.
It's a whole lot more challenging. That would be interesting. I really would love to see this aspect, just that dead sprint, that hot lap without a puck. I would love to see that preserved, but I think doing that in addition, because that to me is really, that's just pure speed. It's as fast as you can go and you don't have to pay mind to anything else. But I do like that idea. I like that idea of adding the puck to it because that's kind of a more game-like condition. And that, you know, I think that probably what it does at the end of the day, Jackie, is there are fast skaters like Barzal, like McDavid, but there are probably people that would surprise you who are able to maintain high speed in spite of the fact that they have the puck. Maybe Barzal and McDavid, well, I'd say maybe McDavid's not good at that. That's an incorrect statement.
Yes, for sure. You mentioned the Shooting Stars competition. I loved it. Yeah. However, I felt like the rules need to be tweaked.
Because in what way?
Hitting, well, you know, they were aiming for the 10-point arch.
Yeah.
And at some points, you know, like Mitch Marner, for example, would hit it, but if it didn't stay in the net, you didn't get the points.
Yeah.
Like, to me, if you hit the target, that's it. It should count.
Yeah.
So that one was very fun to watch. I love it. I hope they bring it back.
Yeah.
But they got to tweak the rules because I thought a few different players got the short end of the stick on
I'm
that one.
I'm with you. If you can be that accurate enough to hit the target, you earn the right to earn those points. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but it was fun to watch. And, you know, talking to some of the players afterwards, a lot of them liked watching it, but were like, I wouldn't want to do it, though, because it's hard. You're shooting from the stands, which is not something that you can really practice for.
Yeah.
Well, you could, but it would take a lot of effort.
It's really unique just to see that set up from down there. I would love to get behind a puck and shoot from that vantage point. It would be a lot of fun. I can't remember the name of the country music singer. I think it might have been Dierks Bentley that did it with Shea Weber back when Shea Weber was still an Asheville Predator. And I think that may be where the inspiration for this one came
from. How did that one go? I didn't see that.
It went really well.
I
was surprised.
Love Dierks Bentley, by the way.
I was so surprised at how frequently Shea was able to hit the net. Never mind just hit the ice from up there and get it to land flat, but Shea was able to hit the net at the far end from way up the top of the second tier.
Did you see Bieber on Ellen recently?
No.
So Ellen had Justin Bieber on, and they played a game called Holy Puck, puck with a P, and they had Bieber shoot at a target.
Oh yeah.
Like you see in the intermission does games where it's just like a hole in a board.
Does he have
you know
much,
what I mean?
Yeah. Does he have
I
much
thought
game?
It was a, I thought it was a bad showing. Like not just because he missed, but his form and shooting the puck. I was like, what are you doing?
He didn't look
I thought
like
it was, you know, I was disappointed. Like bad representation. I thought I need to see it again.
Hurts the Canadian image.
He did redeem himself by because the whole idea was if Bieber gets one of these shots in, then the entire audience will get, I think, tickets to a concert or tickets to something.
Oh, wow.
He missed them all.
Yeah.
His form was terrible. But then he said, you're getting tickets anyway, which of course he's going
to
do.
I'll have to go back and watch that.
Bieber, if you are going to have this competition with Jordan Binnington one day,
yeah.
You need to work on your shooting skills because that wasn't a great showing. I don't know if
it was
like
the
stick. Sound
like he's got a lot of game.
Listen, I've seen the highlights when he plays in his like league with his friends or
is
whatever,
he all right?
And he looks good. But in that particular spot, I just didn't think it was a great showing. But what do I know? Like, I would have done any better. I highly doubt it. But All-Star Weekend, always a good time because everyone's in a good mood. The players are relaxed. The coaches are relaxed. Everybody's families are in town, which is great for the players.
Including Jackie Redmond's family?
Yeah, that may never happen again because my old man, Steve-O, as I like to lovingly call him, pulled a classic proud dad moment, which is nice when your parents are proud of you, but also embarrassing. It's like a little bit of both. And so as the story goes, you know, I go out for brunch with my parents and my yeah. boyfriend, and we decide we're going to walk back to the hotel and sort of take in all of the signage and scenery that the league creates to kind of add to the atmosphere, you know, the pucks that are out and the signs that say All-Star. So we're walking back, and my mom, you know, wanting to document the family trip, so to speak,
right.
It's like, oh, let's go over to that hashtag NHL All-Star sign and take a picture. So we go over, and, you know, the weather wasn't too great. It was a little dreary, so right. There wasn't that many people out and about, but there was one group of people already at the sign. So we walk over, and I immediately recognize that this is Mitch Marner with his family. And he's dressed in sweats and a hoodie. And like, I don't like to bother people when they're on their own time, right? So my family and I just sort of stand back. And my father is not real. My father, a diehard Toronto Maple Leafs fan, does not recognize this. And I'm praying inside
he
that he won't.
Recognize Martin?
No, that he won't recognize him.
Okay.
I'm praying. I'm not going to tell him because I know what my father's
not
capable
of. Not
until
after the fact.
Yeah, I know what Steve-O's like. So I'm like, he can't know. So I'm keeping quiet. I'm not saying a word. They're taking a family photo, so we're kind of, you know, you wait for someone else to get out from the sign, and then you go take your picture. So they take their family picture, and my mom says to me and Emmett, my boyfriend, why don't you two go stand in front of the sign? I'll get a picture with just the two of you, and then we'll take a family one after that. So, okay. So while Emmett and myself go sit in front of the sign, and my mom's doing the mom thing, which is taking forever to take the picture, right? I noticed at the corner of my eye that my father has sauntered off in the direction of the Marners.
Dad had some time to kill and he made the connection.
Yeah. So he put it together, clearly. So we take the picture. I go back over to my mom. My dad comes over and he says to me, he's like, Jackie, I just went up to Mitch Marner. And I go, did you? And I don't have a problem
How
with that
go?
If you want to go and, you know, say love watch or whatever. But my dad says to me, and I quote, he said, well, I said, hey, Mitch, I'm from Toronto. Love watching you play. I'm Jackie Redmond's dad, Steve.
Good.
Like as if Mitch Marner's just supposed to know who I am because I'm, you know, whatever. And so I'm like, you did not say it like that, did you? And he's like, yeah, I said exactly like that.
He said,
why wouldn't I say it like that? And I was like, because I was like, Mitch Marner doesn't care who Jackie Redmond's dad is. And my dad's like, oh, well, he's like, well, you know what? I'm proud of it. And he's like laughing about it. But I was just like mortified. I was like, oh, my God, I hope I don't have to interview Mitch Marner
later.
Did
Mitch make the connection right away? Just for, you know, for the sake of the Canadian boys, or at least the guys playing in that market, they don't get us beamed into into their markets.
Yeah, like NHL Network's not available in Canada.
Right.
I did work in Toronto for quite a bit of time before this, but either way, it's an embarrassing moment.
Yeah.
So, my dad says to me, oh, he just said, oh, okay, like right on. And then I guess Mitch Marner's dad asked my dad how he was enjoying the weekend. And it was a regular conversation. But I was just, I can't interview Mitch Marner later. Like, it's too embarrassing. That's honestly how I felt. I was like, it's too embarrassing. And then E.J.
Be
Raddick.
Be sure to tell him next time you interview him. Steve says
well,
hi.
Well, I don't have to because E.J. Raddick, our colleague, ended up having to interview Mitch Marner later that day and took the opportunity to say, I heard you met Mr. Redmond and embarrassed me further. So EJ already informed Mr. Marner that I was highly embarrassed by the situation. And Mitch Marner, to his credit, was very gracious and said, it's all good. I thought that was her, but I wasn't sure.
I appreciate your point about giving somebody like Mitch his kind of space and respect
in
that circumstance.
Always.
I do, but oftentimes, Jackie, you overestimate or underestimate the athlete's ability to just meet somebody like your dad and be actually genuinely grateful that somebody from Toronto in St. Louis made the connection.
And
it was a great exchange.
As many people have said to me since, because I tweeted about it, and of course a lot of people in the media saw it and decided to tease me about it. But as many people have pointed out to me, you don't think Mitch Marner's dad has had his own proud dad moments?
No,
I'm sure he's been embarrassed himself.
Absolutely.
But that's why. In conclusion, that is why you don't take your parents to All-Star Weekend, because they will embarrass you. But I am lucky my dad is that proud of me, that's for sure.
Challenging enough trying to do your job at a busy, busy weekend and then entertain the folks at the same time. My hat's off to you.
Well, that's the other side of it, right?
That's
because
a lot of work.
You know what it's like when you're at these events. It is like nonstop working. So
it's a blur. It's a blur. And then you're entertaining your parents on top of all that.
Exactly.
That's
it was nice to have them there and spend time with them because, living away from home and living in a different country doesn't present itself that often.
And what you do is so unique and you have unique access. They're thrilled for your mom and dad and Emmett as well, just to be able to kind of experience that, up close and in person in a way they'd never get an opportunity if they were to just, purchase tickets and show up at the venue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's a cool deal for them.
And it's that way for the players too, right? Like TJ Oshie, the idea that he could have his dad there based on their history and everything that they've been going through as a family. So that was a really nice story as well for me at All-Star Weekend was the idea that not only is TJ Oshie a first-time All-Star in St. Louis where he played so many seasons, but he also gets to have his dad in attendance for it as well, which
I thought
was really nice.
That's a great connection. It really is. It's just so much love coming out of St. Louis as a hockey market over the last year or so. That to me too was a real highlight of the weekend. Those two, TJ and his father, that really is one of the great personal stories that comes across kind of over NHL airwaves, and fantastic that they got to celebrate that moment in time in a market like St. Louis. That was a really cool deal.
And TJ Oshie's such a good dude, right? Like we hear from Panger
very
and all
humble,
these people all the time how often he gives back, and he does so without publicizing it and does so without trying to make it about him and what he's doing, but he gives back to fans all the time. And there was a funny moment behind the scenes. I was about to interview Guy Carboneau. And TJ Oshie, I also was supposed to interview, and they showed up at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And so TJ Oshie walks up, and I look to my producer, like, what do I do here? I've never really been in that situation before. I'm like, he's got to get out for a game in a minute, or he's got to go home. It was after the 3-on-3, and they had been eliminated. And Guy Carboneau is Guy Carboneau. So, like, who do you make wait in this situation?
Yeah.
And someone goes, interview, TJ. Or Guy Carboneau goes, I'll wait. And TJ Oshie goes, oh, hell no. I am not going to go before Hall of Famer Guy Carboneau. Like, I'll wait. He goes, there is no chance in heck that I am going to go before Guy Carboneau.
Yeah.
So just another example of how humble TJ Oshie is, I think. But it is a family event, and it was jarring coming off such a family event and seeing everybody with their families and their kids in tow. And then to land on my way back from St. Louis to the news of Kobe Bryant. And much like the rest of the world, the hockey world is mourning the loss of such just a larger than life sports figure who really transcended not just his own sport, but the sports world, winning an Academy Award and just everything that he stood for in terms of his work ethic and his principles in terms of going after your dreams and not resting really until you achieve them. And so like everybody else, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to all of the families of everyone that was lost in that helicopter crash.
Well, you know, it really, where somebody like Kobe is concerned, it starts with his abilities on the court, and then that really had over time earned him a platform from which to operate, from which to impact the people around him. And Kobe is one of those rare people that use it in such a positive and impactful way, as you say, across entertainment. He was somebody that, you know, just as a member of an athlete, as a member of another sport, you know, you watch these guys and you marvel at them in spite of the fact, even though they don't play the same sport as you, because ability is ability, talent is talent. And I really found him to be a remarkable human being on and off the court. You'd be hard pressed to find somebody, an athlete, that impacted his sport and impacted the environment around him outside of his sport.
There are
and
very
somebody,
few.
And somebody that was that prominent, someone
worldwide,
that recognizable on an international level, really.
Yeah, and he was just a great example, too, for any kids out there that have, you know, big dreams, that, you know, there's talent, and Kobe certainly had a natural ability, but when talent works hard, that's where you really take yourself to the next level. And I'll never forget watching a documentary called Muse, and it was about Kobe Bryant and his Mamba mentality and how he approached the game and how he approached life, really. And it's one of the most inspiring pieces I've ever watched in my life. So I recommend, and I feel like a broken record, because for the last 3 days, all I've been saying is, if you haven't watched Muse, you got to watch Muse. It's so good. But, you know, we see hockey figures coming out and talking about his impact on them and how much he inspired people. And the one that comes to mind is Alex Ovechkin, who said he met Kobe. He was in LA and the Lakers were playing, and for whatever reason, Kobe wasn't going to play in that game. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of disappointed, but Kobe got word that Ovi was planning on attending the game while he was in town and wanted to see Kobe Bryant play. And Kobe Bryant ended up signing a pair of Kobe's and a jersey for Alex Ovechkin.
Oh, wow.
Went to the Capitals game, I believe, met Ovi, did the whole thing. And so there's a lot of stories like that about Kobe Bryant, who was so self-motivated, so confident, right? And that's part of what, as a player, you know, Celtics fans know this, you love to hate Kobe Bryant, right? Because he was so good.
He's good at everything
he did. And he knew he was good. And he let you know that he knew he was good and he was going to beat you. And so all these stories come out about him reaching out to all these other athletes, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, for advice, and then reaching out to other athletes like Alexander Ovechkin and different players to give them motivation and touch base with them. So just a really larger than life figure.
He really was, and everything he did so well. Really just somebody that just never perceived that there was a ceiling to anything he did.
He just
blew the top out of everything he did. And I really do have to say, Jackie, my lasting impression as a father of three daughters was not so much Kobe the basketball player or Kobe the artist, just in terms of impact on the entertainment world. It was Kobe the father.
Yeah.
And those moments, you know, courtside with his father, where he's equal parts parent and coach and teacher, and just the connection that he had, and you could just, it came across, and I'm speaking to the clips that I've seen of this over time, but it really does come across on camera just how earnest, how genuine, how loving and caring, how tender he is at that same time. I thought that's amazing. For somebody that has, you know, forged a career, forged a life like Kobe Bryant, it really came through to me. The most important thing to this man really is family, and you can see it in the connection he has with his young children.
Yeah, we were really starting to see Kobe as a human being and a person in the second act, right? Post-playing and in his retirement, just how much he embraced. And it was his daughter Gianna who tragically passed away with him in this helicopter crash that reignited his love of the game. I mean, Kobe Bryant, according to all reports, had stopped watching basketball highlights, stopped watching basketball games, after he stopped playing, and it was his daughter's love of the game that brought him back in. And there's a great clip going around, and I'm sure lots of people have seen it, where a host at ESPN, whose name escapes me right now, told a story about Kobe being so proud of his four daughters, at the time three daughters of the story, that he was so proud to be a girl dad. Yeah. And that hashtag has been trending the last 24 hours of different people posting pictures with their daughter saying, I'm a girl dad, and I'm so proud to be a girl dad. Yeah. And if you go to Kobe Bryant's Twitter account, and it was Elle Duncan of ESPN, thank you for that, Bob Bender, because I could not remember her name, who did a fantastic job retelling this story and caused a movement, really, on Twitter, on social media over the last day or so. But you look at Kobe's Twitter and you look at all the pictures going around and you hear all the stories, and he was such a supporter of the women's game, not just his daughter and everything he did for her travel team, but for women in general, attending WNBA games, retweeting a lot of stuff that had to do with the WNBA, and that very much will be a part of his lasting legacy as we, you know, celebrate his life and mourn, you know, such a huge, huge and really unexplainable loss in the world. But you're right, it's watching that relationship that was very much something that we only really got to witness once he retired, because when he was playing, it was all about Mamba mentality and beating everybody else and I have more championships than Shaq and all of that stuff, right, that made him so such a prominent figure. But it's been honestly hard to talk about hockey and cover a sport when we are mourning this right now. But we do mourn with the rest of the world. And you know, Kobe will be partly remembered for his love of the women's game and support of it.
Yeah, and so appreciate, too. It's kind of that, you know, the impact, the lasting legacy is one that kind of spans all sports. And really grateful to be a part of a league, the NHL, that has done a really fantastic job, especially, and I know a lot of folks in the LA Kings market that work for that organization have done a fantastic job of just paying tribute to truly just one of the greats of all time.
Yeah, Stu, it's been an emotional week across the sports world and beyond, that is for sure. And we didn't feel right recording this podcast without talking about Kobe Bryant. And there's really no easy way to transition to the next thing, aside from just saying that, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody that was affected by the lives lost in that helicopter crash. But let's move on. Today's guest had a monumental weekend in St. Louis, and it was big. For, you know, we talk about Kobe's impact on women's basketball. Natalie Spooner is having a huge impact along with her teammates on the women's game of hockey, and the 3-on-3 competition in St. Louis was a big step forward for them. So we are very excited to welcome Team Canada's very own Natalie Spooner. Natalie, thanks for doing this. We appreciate the time. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on.
Where are you today? Because you were in St. Louis. I know you're busy, so where are you coming from?
I am back in Toronto right now, but tomorrow morning we're off to Victoria for the three-game series against the U.S., the rivalry series. So we play them in Victoria, Vancouver, and Anaheim.
Oh, I love it. I love that you guys have these rivalry series as well.
They are fantastic.
Just ups the ante even more, keeps that competition very much alive. Let's go back to St. Louis and what was obviously a huge moment for all 20 of the women that competed in the 3-on-3 competition. Has it sunk in for you yet just how big that moment was for women's hockey?
I mean, I think it's still slowly hitting me, but I mean, at first, you know, I was just kind of, everything was a blur. It was so exciting to be there. But once you got done playing and got to just hang out on the ice with the guys, I thought that was a pretty cool moment, just being like, wow, we're really here. You know, we're in the skills competition. This is really happening. And I thought, it was so amazing that they included us and that, you know, we got to showcase our game on that stage.
Natalie, curious to get your thoughts. You know, at the women's level, the professional level, and even international, rarely have the opportunity unless it comes up in regular time play, regulation play. But the 3-on-3 must be a somewhat unfamiliar format for you guys to compete at for a longer stretch of time. What was that like? How did that feel? Kind of stepping into that moment on an expanded scale.
Yeah, we don't play 3-on-3 very often, but I mean, it felt good. Like, there was lots of ice. Obviously, we were still battling hard. I think that was, you know, the one thing we were kind of struggling with is, like, it's supposed to be a fun weekend, but we also need to showcase our talent. So, you know, we need to bring it. And every time we get on the U.S., on the ice with the U.S., no matter what, I mean, it's a battle. So we knew, you know, as soon as you get on it, it's Canada versus U.S., it was like, okay, game on now. So, I mean, it was fun, though. The 3-on-3 was fun. It's there's lots of ice. There's lots of time with the puck. So it was interesting but fun.
You know what? I think you checked both boxes. It was entertaining, but it was also highly competitive. And you could tell from the energy of the game that both of these teams were not taking it lightly. This was not a relaxing off weekend for you guys. This was a fierce competition, so it was super fun to watch. And I can't help but ask you about your attempt at the lacrosse-style goal. We've seen it now a couple of times, or three times, really, in the NHL this year. Was that something that you had pre-planned going into the competition, or just spur the moment, you're like, screw it, I'm going to try this right now?
No, I've been practicing a few, so like obviously the one behind the net is the one that you see most of the time where they pick it up on their forehand, but I've been practicing one where I pick it up on my backhand and kind of deep the goalie out in the air. It didn't work. I mean, I think I was going a little bit too fast for it. I wasn't used to trying it at that speed. But I've tried two times now, so let's hope third time's a charm.
Oh, I love it. I have huge props for you having the guts to try that on that stage.
Yeah, I tell you what, it takes a lot of courage. A lot of courage when all the hockey world, the eyes are upon you, but great attempt. Tell me, I really, you know, on behalf of the guys, the fact that, you know, the females have entered the All-Star competition, it's just been a terrific dynamic to the whole thing. What's it like to rub shoulders with the guys? And, you know, I guess the second part of that question, a favorite moment from this All-Star weekend for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, getting on the ice with the guys, you really realize, you know, you're pretty much one of them. When we're on the ice together, we're just all hockey players, which I think is the coolest thing. Is, you know, people sometimes look at our sport as lesser, but we're really equals when we're there. And, you know, I found it really awesome to just be able to hang out on the ice with them when we were done our competition, when that Shooting Stars competition was happening and we were watching and cheering on. You know, we were cheering on our teammates. The guys were cheering on some of their teammates. I thought that was a really neat moment. And just to be, you know, included there, it was really amazing.
Yeah, the level of respect going both ways between all the players was very obvious, even in just interviewing and chatting with some of the guys after the competition and after the game. So many of them had such high praise for you. And we're so excited just to watch the 3-on-3 between the USA and Team Canada because of the level of competition and how must-see it really is every time we're treated to it. I want to ask you about the red carpet because, you know, hockey, unlike any other sport, for both men and women, is a sport where you're covered head to toe when you play the game. And we don't get to see your personality that often, right?
Yeah.
But the red carpet is a place where both NHLers and now female hockey players sort of get to shine. I thought the ladies represented very well in terms of their style on the red carpet. How exciting was that for you to kind of experience that and get to show off, you know, the personality side of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, normally for hockey games, we have to dress up. So it's like the look good, feel good, play good. But obviously this being a different stage, we're like, you know, let's look good. Let's bring it for the red carpet. And I mean, I think our Team Canada definitely brought it. We had some really well-dressed ladies out there and we had a lot of fun with it too. We were talking about it about a week before, being like, what are they going to wear in the locker room? So it was a blast to be able to walk that red carpet.
Natalie, we'd be remiss if we didn't get a comment from your thought from you just about the professional side, the women's professional side. Know that over the last little while, you become more involved, certainly on the Players Association side, and then, too, that kind of bridge between the U.S. professional, the Canadian professional, that sits in a bit of ambiguity. But what insight can you offer us to just kind of give us a state of where's women's professional hockey at today?
Yeah, I mean, I think for people that don't know, in last April, the CWHL folded, which was our league. And, you know, we didn't really know what we were going to play this year. And we started this PWHPA, which we have now, the Players Association. And we were able to go on this Dream Gap Tour. So we're playing lots of games all around North America. We've had showcases in Toronto. We have another one coming up in Philly. There's one in Arizona. So that's been pretty awesome that we've still been able to continue playing, but obviously it's not a league, it's not something that's sustainable, so that's what we're looking for now. And I think it speaks volumes when you have Canadian players and American players that have come together in this to fight for something, you know, that we want. We don't get along with each other on the ice, like, it's that rival. So it speaks volumes that we've come together for this. And, you know, I don't know where we are right now. Obviously, the showcases have been going really great. Playing at the All-Star Game, we've shown that there is a market for women's hockey, and people do want to watch it. It's just as entertaining. As a player, I would love to be able to play under that NHL umbrella, kind of the WNBA setup, and we've seen how far the WNBA has come with them signing that new CBA. They're kind of paving the way for us and a league that we would love to model ourselves after.
You know, and I think, too, as you just noted, All-Star Weekend was a huge step in the right direction, I think, for the women's game. And I have a huge amount of respect for you and all the women that have sort of banded together for one common cause and one common fight. Ty Domi recently on the Spit and Chicklets podcast really went to bat for women's hockey and sort of talked about his passion for it and how much he enjoys the game. When you hear someone of Ty Domi's stature kind of, you know, stand up for your cause and fight for you guys, what did that mean for you?
I mean, it's amazing. I think, you know, even this weekend, we heard so much positive feedback from our game, from, you know, players and Ty standing up for us. I think, you know, those people also are going to make a difference. And I think, you know, right now you have 200 women wanting somewhere to play, but, you know, a lot of men out there aren't supportive of it. So to have Ty, to have these other guys that are supportive, it's amazing. And to the people that, you know, don't believe in our sport, I would just challenge them to get out to a game and to watch. I think, you know, they'll be pleasantly surprised. You know, they may have seen a game maybe 20 years ago, but the game has grown so fast. There's so many more girls playing hockey now that, you know, the game is getting better. Even from one Olympics to the next, I'm noticing the speed and the skill is improving so fast. So I would just challenge them to get out to a game and watch it.
Well, Natalie, let me, if you haven't heard my voice on this, let me add my voice. Love the women's brand of hockey. You guys are fierce in the way you compete, and it's kind of sitting on the forward part of your chair every time, certainly the U.S. and Canada take to the ice at the women's level, professional or international Olympics. So love to watch it without question. Given that, given Ty's comments and the NHL's kind of willingness to draw the women's athletes into the All-Star competition, and just maybe, I guess, the way the tide has turned where women's professional hockey is concerned, forecasted for us, crystal ball it for us. Where do you see women's hockey 10 years from today, just given what the changes you've seen?
I mean, I hope it's a league that's, you know, under that, like the WNBA model, under the NHL. You know, it's not like we're asking for, you know, millions of dollars. It's really just to make a livable wage. I mean, last year I played for the Toronto Furies. I made $7,000 for the whole year. So, you know, girls have to have real jobs while still playing hockey. So my hope is, you know, it's a salary that they can focus on hockey. They can be training during the day, you know, having their practices. And I think that that's also going to take women's hockey to another level because you won't have, you know, to prioritize life over hockey. If you can kind of, you know, have that balance in your life. So, I mean, I hope that it's a league, and it's a league that's going to stick around for 100-plus years just like the NHL.
I love that. I hope the same for you guys. Let's get to know you a little bit, Natalie, because, you know, I think it's important for hockey fans to understand who you guys are as people and get to know your personalities a little bit. So just for our viewers that maybe have not listened to an interview with you before, you know, who was your favorite player growing up? What team do you root for in the NHL? Give us a little bit of your backstory in terms of your own hockey fandom.
Okay. I mean, growing up, I had three older brothers, so they were probably my number one fan.
Love it.
But when I was 11, I got to meet Jennifer Botterill, who is a four-time Olympic medalist. And meeting her, seeing her gold medal, I think that's what really sparked my dream and realizing that, wow, these women actually win medals, and you know, they can do this later on in life. And I think that that's really what made me chase this dream. I grew up in Toronto. I root for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Furies were kind of partnered a bit with them, so I can't root against my Toronto Maple Leafs for sure.
Hey, fair enough.
Well, you've got a strong sister alliance there, Jackie. Let me tell you, Natalie.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm very open about my fandom.
Natalie, like many athletes, your abilities to perform well in a sports context, it tends to open doors for you. I know one of those doors was Battle of the Blades 2019. Mm-hmm. Where does that rank just in terms of your memories, your career's worth of memories?
Oh, it's up there. I mean, it was so much fun. It seemed to go by so quick now that I look back on it. It was only 3 or 4 months of figure skating, but I mean, you're spending every day on the ice about 3 or 4 hours a day training for figure skating, which is pretty crazy to say, but I had a blast. By the end, I was like, okay, I'm not too bad at this. And then I watched my partner skate with a real partner. I was like, oh gosh, I am terrible.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was so much fun. I mean, the toe picks get you. I mean, just even the dancing, like some of it was so hard. But when you got out there and had to perform and you just did it. And by the end, you're like, wow, okay, that's pretty fun.
Now, you were on Amazing Race as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay, which was harder, Battle of the Blades or Amazing Race?
Ooh, I mean, they were both really fast-paced shows. It's so hard to say, like, Battle of the Blades, at least you knew you were going to be figure skating.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Amazing Race, you were waking up and you had no clue where you were going or what language people were going to be speaking or what you were going to have to do. But maybe say Amazing Race.
I mean, when I watch Amazing Race, like, I don't know how people do it. I would just be in pure panic mode all the time.
Amazing test.
Yeah.
Amazing
yeah.
test. Natalie, had you spent much time on figure skates before Battle of the Blades over the course
Never.
Of your... No, is that right? That's amazing.
So you started, like, as a kid, like, learned to skate. You were in hockey skates the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, I love
hockey skates.
That is
mm-hmm.
that is a
That's
difficult
a
transition.
Test.
And I tell you what, harder to go that way from skates, hockey skates, to figure skates than the other way around. I think the transition from figure to hockey is probably an easier one.
Yeah, I think
those toes picks will get you.
A lot more going to the figure skates.
All right, last question for you, Natalie, before we let you go, because we know you're busy. You've done Amazing Race. You've done Battle of the Blades. You're still competing at the highest level in women's hockey and help pushing that game and that product forward and trying to grow the game. What's left on your bucket list? Like, what else does Natalie Spooner want to accomplish?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think, you're always setting goals. I think, obviously, right now... we got World Championships coming up in April, so to win a gold medal at World Championships and then looking forward to the next Olympics, bring Canada that gold medal back because obviously last Olympics,
yes.
it didn't really
yes.
go the way we wanted.
Sounds good.
Well, listen, we appreciate the time. Congratulations on a massive weekend and continued success moving forward. We know it won't be the last time we're chatting with you.
Thanks so much.
Natalie Spooner, one of the game's great players in women's hockey. And every time Team USA and Team Canada, everybody knows this. It's always high intensity, emotional, passionate hockey. And we're going to get that tonight, I would think, in the Battle of Alberta. Stu, this
you
game
know,
has been circled for the viewers that don't know
yeah.
because Zach Cassian and Matthew Tkachuk have some bad blood. Zach Cassian had to serve a 2-game suspension. He returns of all nights, go figure, tonight yeah. when the Oilers play the Flames. So what do you, I mean, listen, you played and you were
yeah.
a guy that threw down. When something gets to this boiling point and there's another game coming up, is it circled? Do we overplay it or do you expect there to be drama tonight?
It's possible that we all overplay it. It's entirely possible because we've seen this a lot in the past. There are these instances that take place. Then there's, the so-called revenge game that comes.
We get all hyped up for it and nothing happens.
And it's super anticlimactic.
Yeah.
But having said that, Jackie,
however,
I just think where these two guys are concerned, Cassian is a very passionate guy. Tkachuk is also a really proud and a really effective hockey player who to some degree has kind of had his reputation called to task just in
Big
the way
time.
Cassian has kind of gone about this. So I really think, there are several things going on here, but just looking through the eyes of each athlete, if I'm Cassian, I'm going to find a moment early in this game to make it clear to Tkachuk, hey, everything I've said leading up to this point holds true to this moment. Here I am. I'm ready to go if you're willing.
Right.
Essentially calling him out, opening the door. If you're prepared to step through it, Tkachuk, let me
ask you this because the big thing Cassian called out Tkachuk on was if you're gonna hit me like that, answer the bell, so to speak, and fight. Now, my question is, a lot of people have said that the strategy, so to speak, for Cassian and company in this game should be for Cassian to, you know, lay some big hits on some of the star players on the Flames, so it almost forces the issue. You played the game. You know the culture better than anyone. Is that a smart strategy to sort of, for Cassian to play very physical on the likes of Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and those types of players, and almost force the issue for a Matthew Tkachuk?
Yeah, well, two things, really. I think, to the earlier point I make, if it's me and I'm coaching Cassian through this situation, if I'm Tippett and I'm coaching him through it, I would want him to confront Tkachuk. Matt Cassian, in his own right, is an effective player this year. Tkachuk is the heart and soul of that Calgary lineup. If he can take him off the ice for 5 minutes, that's a really effective strategy. Having said that, if I'm Cassian and Tkachuk turns me down, then I think the point that I've heard EJ Rannick and others make is, you know, playing physical to the Gaudreaus of the lineup, to the Monahans of the lineup, is a good strategy to take as well. If you can do that effectively, and please remember, you know, we've often said this. It was true of my era. I think it's true today. It's not so much what you do when you do it. It's who you are when you do it. So for a guy like Cassian, who has a bit of a reputation and has certainly made some really high-profile remarks going into this one, the spotlight is on this guy. He's got to have it buttoned up tight so he's not putting his team at a disadvantage. And let's make this point, Jackie. Hovering in the background, the Flames and the Oilers are both teetering on the playoff
cutoff. Important points.
Every point's critical. So you've got to, you know, it's not like October and, hey, it's a revenge game and we'll do whatever it takes to kind of stand behind our guy. It's an important time of the year.
You got to play it smart. One more, because I don't think we've discussed it since it happened. Do you think Matthew Tkachuk should have answered the bell, so to speak, in that game?
I think so.
You know, does Cassian have a point, I guess, is my question.
I think so.
Because
so,
you are someone that understands that whole culture very well.
The NHL in my era, and I think probably to a lesser degree, I would be willing to concede that, when I played, it was law of the jungle. And the law of the jungle says the following. If you're going to run around, and if you're going to take runs at guys, whether it's Cassian, whether it's McDavid, or
doesn't
whoever,
matter.
It doesn't matter. If you're going to continually taking runs at guys, we're going to want to hold you accountable from time to time. And that means just when you're called out, show up and throw down. I don't know if it holds up, if that piece of jungle law applies
as strong today. For Cassian,
and
it is.
Yeah, it sure does for Cassian, and he's sure trying to take us back there, which has got a lot of folks fired up. But to me, at the end of the day, if I'm Tkachuk, I think his respect within the NHL, across the league, probably rises if he shows up and let me use the term, does the honorable thing, and fights Zach Cassian.
Yeah, yes. Well, I guess, you know what? We're a few only hours away from this game. So
this will be interesting.
I know there's going to be a lot of eyeballs in this one, including the eyeballs of George Parros, who will be in attendance. So he obviously knows.
Judge George will be in the building.
Yes, which, I mean, the Department of Player Safety watches everything anyways.
Yeah.
But just the fact that you know that they're in the building may have a bit of an impact on that game. I guess time will tell. We will see.
And trust that George and his staff have been trying to communicate to both camps, you know, sort this out as you choose to, but, you know, do the law-abiding thing, for lack of a better term. Keep it within the bounds of fair play.
And the best part
is,
they play again on Sunday. So we're going to get
remarkable?
Two doses of this Battle of Alberta in less than a week's time. So that's going to be super exciting for hockey fans, and that is certainly probably the game of the night for a lot of people on tonight's schedule, depending on when you're listening to this or watching on YouTube, this podcast. So if you've already seen it, they already know. It's almost like watching something in the past. Like people that are watching this after the game's already done are like, you had no idea that this was going to happen.
I will say my last point on this whole thing. I've been a member of the Battle of Alberta, and it has its ebbs and flows. It's really heated at certain times. It kind of cools, and it's on the back burner of the stove at other times. But when these two teams are both kind of playoff worthy and are in contention for the spots, when that happens at the same moment in time, it can get really dicey. Add to it, Cassian and Tkachuk are pouring a little gas on the fire.
Oh, big
time.
It'll
be an interesting outing.
Yeah.
I'm sure these next two games will be interesting.
I'm excited to watch. I want to get your thoughts on Connor McDavid as well, because a documentary came out recently.
Yeah.
I believe Sportsnet did the documentary, or actually, I might have been a production company outside, but it aired on Sportsnet, is
it
my
did.
Point,
yep.
About Connor McDavid's knee injury. And the big shock value of this documentary was that we really had no idea how severe this knee injury really was. And go figure, you actually had the same injury. So as somebody that knows the in intricate detail that injury, how shocked were you to learn that this was not only the case, but that it was kept secret?
I mean, I sat upright in my chair once I had a chance to go through that documentary and actually understand the specific injury that Connor McDavid sustained, and then the decision to not have that injury surgically repaired. Because I went through essentially the same thing, Jackie. You have two bones. If you can envision inside the joint of that knee, you have two ligaments inside that joint. One is the ACL.
Yeah.
One is the PCL, and they both kind of stabilize these two major bones, the femur and the tibia, as they interact or kind of get torqued in between them. They stabilize those two bones. The thing is, you don't really need them for hockey, and the decision not to repair them is one that is somewhat controversial in the medical community. But if you do decide to have it repaired, and it would obviously make the joint stronger, it's a longer rehabilitation period. So the decision I faced back in my first year of pro, New Year's Eve of 87, was not to have my ACL repaired when I blew it out entirely. It's the same decision that McDavid made when his PCL was completely torn. They're essentially two different ligaments, but they do the same thing inside that joint.
Right.
He elected not to have that PCL repaired so that he could come back for the following training camp, September, as opposed to somewhere much further down the line. So it was really interesting. It was a really interesting documentary to watch. And I've heard folks out there, I think Bobby Orr may have been the one to really suggest this, they ought to be beaming that documentary, that ought to be required curriculum across all grade schools in Canada. Just the courage and the dedication behind that decision for Connor McDavid not to have that repaired, but his path back to recovery and ultimately being ready come the following training camp.
I do feel, though, like Connor McDavid is a bit of a freak of nature. You know what I mean? I think like that decision could be different for someone else, right?
Yeah.
But the documentary, if you haven't seen it, is called Connor McDavid, Whatever It Takes.
Whatever it
takes. Aired originally on Sportsnet.
Yeah.
So you can find it somewhere on the internet, I'm sure. I'm sure you can find it. But the piece that's interesting to me is that in a day where we have so many insiders, like Elliot Friedman, and social media, and sources, and just access to information, that this information really was kept secret for so long, to the point that Elliot Friedman was on NHL Network this week saying not even Kenny Holland knew the extent that this went. So, I mean, there were second opinions, third opinions for McDavid in terms of doctors. How do you think, like, the ownership of a team would take to knowing there was a bit of secrecy there?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. It really is. I think if you're ownership, you probably understand the thinking that goes into the secrecy behind that. I think my one overriding, you know, feeling about all this, and it probably informs your question, is ultimately the decision
is
that,
up to the player.
It's that of the player. It's his knee. It's his career. You know, of course, you're going to want him to get a wide range of medical opinions on both sides of, well, surgery is best or non-surgery is preferred.
But I do think, and this is not about the McDavid situation, it's just generally in sports.
Yeah.
When an athlete goes outside of the organization to get a second opinion, a third opinion, I just always find it interesting, because I know that the league has the best medical staff.
They do, but I think when you can, and this is not an indictment of the medical community, but at the end of the day, a club a club doctor may not view the athlete in the same way as somebody completely removed of mm-hmm. any conflict or
right,
any
like
particular
the
bias.
Natural human bias that it's, happens when
me,
you
let
work
me just get in front
situation.
Of a doctor that has no connection yeah. to anybody in our sport. That for the athlete is a little bit of comfort, just in terms of there's no bias, there's no
that's
there's
true.
No
that's
club trying
point.
To accelerate me back,
yeah.
and then maybe framing things through that lens. The one other comment I thought, and this will be interesting to folks, I think, Connor McDavid has worked with Gary Roberts, an yeah. ex-teammate of mine, and really a fitness
guru.
That's a great way to put it. But he trains hockey athletes specifically outside of the context of the rink. It's usually off the ice. It's over the course of the summer. He's focal in preparing these guys to start the season. He is probably the most respected in his field in our sport.
Sure.
Gary Roberts is. I found his comment to be really interesting. He says, what came to light in this injury is really something we've been concerned about all along, which is Connor might play the game too fast. He plays
wow.
the game that fast. It may have contributed
That's
to the
a
injury.
Statement.
Because, you know, you accelerate past people when they don't expect it. They're doing things out of desperation. And from their desperation, if I'm the defender and you're Connor McDavid, I do something that might cause you to fall in an awkward way.
Right.
And I think that's kind of part of what happened.
That's interesting.
Where this injury is concerned. So when you think about that comment from Gary, I thought that was really insightful. He plays the game. His ability to accelerate and maintain top high-end speed with the puck on his stick, it's just,
well,
it blows up the model.
You know what? Lucky for us, he opted to skip the surgery because he's having a heck of a season.
Can you believe that?
With the Edmonton Oilers. And I personally, I just want to see the Oilers in the postseason. I want to see
Connor
McDavid back in the playoffs because he is one of, if not the best player on the planet. And not having him in the playoffs, yeah. is always a travesty to
me. It seems like it just, I mean, we could say this about a lot of different players across a lot of different markets, but he really is one of the most brilliant of our game. And the Edmonton market is one that has just followed hockey in such a feverish way. It seems to me a tragic waste if McDavid and the Oilers aren't part of the postseason as the postseason takes place every year.
I think most
we
people
need
agree.
That.
The
we
funny
need that.
Thing is, or the interesting thing is that going into the Battle of Alberta tonight,
yeah.
there's just as many people talking about Zach Kassian
yeah.
as they are Connor McDavid. That's
yes.
when you know the heat, if you will, is sizzling.
It's come to the front
in the rivalry.
It's
a peak.
Again.
It's a yeah. peak in the ebbs and flows.
Exactly.
In terms of the Battle of Alberta, if you haven't yet seen it based on when you're listening or watching this podcast, enjoy the game. Thank you so much for listening to the Puck Culture Podcast. We have a blast with it. Hit us up on Twitter, on Instagram with your thoughts. Use the hashtag Puck Culture, and we will see you next week.